The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, good morning. Apologies for coming to you slightly late. How are you?
Boker Tov, Chodesh Tov. The good news is it's only 2 weeks to Purim now that we are properly into the month of Adar Bet, of course. So 2 weeks to Purim, and we look forward to having something to celebrate. I noticed that in the course of talking about the war in Ukraine this week, I've hardly had a chance to talk about anything that's going on the ground in Israel. Another check your mezuzah story coming from Iran when they tried to launch a satellite into space on Saturday, but it failed due to some mysterious explosion and malfunction. Read into that what you wish. The Israeli hospital Sheba Tel HaShomer has been ranked 10th in the world on Newsweek magazine's annual list of top 250 hospitals, a great accolade for Sheba Tel HaShomer Hospital. The emergency provisions, emergency situations surrounding COVID was lifted yesterday, the 1st of March. We now no longer have an emergency, any emergency provisions around Corona. Do any of us really remember what that was all about?
Remember the pandemic?
Yeah, it seems almost have disappeared, and certainly disappeared off the front pages, at least for now. In Israel, things have almost returned back to what used to be, with, you know, people wearing masks still indoors. But more than that, things are really, thankfully, quite stable. But unfortunately, as you know, we've been discussing for the past week or so, the war in Ukraine very much dominates the news, very much dominates what people are thinking, what people are concerned about. And so, unfortunately, we are forced to continue our discussion about that.
We are. That is the number one story, and that is what's dominating everything we speak about. Israel voted in favor of the UN General Assembly resolution condemning Russia.
So that was sort of expected. I mean, even though Israel finds itself in this very compromising position where I think on the one hand, it would very much like to support Ukraine as much as possible, and yet from a national security point of view, is being forced to be cautious about condemning Russia. But the news coming from the UN General Assembly yesterday was quite interesting in a few respects. First of all, because Israel very much voted in favor of the resolution condemning Russia's aggression, and was in good company because there were another 140 countries that voted in favor of this resolution. Only five countries voted against the resolution. The list makes some interesting reading. Russia, as you would expect, Syria, North Korea, Eritrea, and Belarus. Those were the five countries voting against the resolution, with a further 35 odd countries abstaining, and apparently there were 12 who were absent, but very much carried, strongly carried, I would say, with a vast majority of those voting in favor. In terms of Israel's politics on this particular vote, again, there were some little tweaks that were made. In the first instance, the Israeli ambassador to the United Nations, Gilad Erdan, stood in the room and applauded the resolution when it was passed, but he was not allowed to actually speak to the resolution on behalf of the Israeli delegation. That job was led to Israel's deputy ambassador, Noah Furman. And again, this is part of the politics that Israel is trying to enter into in order to try and tread this very, very difficult middle path between wanting to support Ukraine and at the same time not wishing to condemn Russia. But the interesting thing for me is that it's not only about not wanting to keep Russia, let's say, quiet on the Syrian border, and at the same time wanting to support Ukraine as much as possible. But I think that Israel is now entering into a situation where it could potentially be getting onto the wrong side of international politics. As far as the United States is concerned, as far as many of the European allies are concerned, Israel is on the wrong side of politics here, and that Israel might well be coming under some pressure from its other allies to support the condemnation of Russia more actively, rather than just to stay silent or to try and tread this middle road. I think the pressure is going to be building on the Israeli government. But in another related development, and it's important to put all of this into context, the Israeli Prime Minister Naftali Bennett yesterday held two conversations which were 2 hours apart, the first of which was with Ukrainian President Zelensky, the second of which 2 hours later was with Russian President Putin. I think that Naftali Bennett at the moment is one of the very few people who's still speaking to both parties and doing so almost in the course of a single conversation. We understand that the call to the Kremlin was accepted by President Putin after a request was made by Israel. We are not particularly sure of what went down in the conversation with President Putin. Not much has been said about that, other than to say that the call actually took place and that it was at the request of the Israeli side. We do know that President Zelensky once again requested assistance from Israel, requested protective equipment in addition to the 100 tons of humanitarian aid that has already been sent to Ukraine. We understand that in particular, Ukraine is in need of helmets and of protective vests, which are particularly hard to come by apparently in Europe at the moment. And so President Zelensky has requested that Naftali Bennett help him to obtain those things. Very fascinating that President Zelensky in his video message chose to speak in Hebrew and appealed to world Jewry as part of his video message to the world. He's been doing this daily video message to the world, just explaining what he perceives is going on in his country. And on this particular occasion, chose to speak in Hebrew, particularly in light of that attack against Babin Yar that we spoke about yesterday, the Holocaust memorial site. And he said in Hebrew, he addressed the Jews of the world, saying that, you know, Nazism is effectively reappearing here, that it's rearing its head once more, and warning the Jews of the world that, you know, that particular era is not over in its entirety, and really made quite a heartfelt appeal in Hebrew in order to try and attract support from the Jews of the world. Not that President Zelensky necessarily needs more support than he's getting already. One feels that he's really getting massive amounts of support from everywhere, but the question is whether he's getting the right support that he really needs. So, you know, lots of interesting things happening on the diplomatic front in terms of Israel's position in this war. And the question is, to what, you know, how much longer will Israel be able to maintain this somewhat ambivalent position between Russia and Ukraine? There are reports that the German chancellor has been standing forward as a possible mediator. I'm not quite sure what his standing is between the two countries, but Prime Minister Naftali Bennett still thinks that he is one of the few people who could potentially mediate. As we've already mentioned before, I feel that it might be something of a double-edged sword. It might come with more price than we wish to pay. It's going to be very difficult to succeed in this particular issue. We understand that in the conversation with President Putin yesterday, President Putin mentioned that what he is seeking from any compromise situation is the guarantee of Russia's security. Now, you know, we can read into that whatever we wish to, because I had no idea that Russia's security was so severely threatened. We know that there is the situation with the United States. We know that there is the situation between NATO and the Warsaw Pact countries lining up against each other. And there is a huge battle, particularly in that corridor between Russia and Turkey, let's say, for NATO and Warsaw Pact countries to gain footholds. And, you know, the supreme irony of this whole war is that if it has come as a result of Ukraine's desire to join NATO, and if NATO represents the ideal that no country will be left to handle some sort of military aggression on its own without the support of other NATO countries, if all of that is true, then it is very ironic that as a result of that, Ukraine has been left on its own to handle this military conflict. You would have thought that, you know, the work that that it was doing with NATO would have potentially
protected,
given
sure.
Yeah, some protection. And it's hugely ironic that it's particularly that issue, as we understand it, which has left Ukraine pretty isolated militarily and under massive attack from Russia. Of course, Sergei Lavrov, the Russian foreign minister, has made some interesting comments, including references to a nuclear war and references to the fact that the Third World War will be a very dangerous nuclear war. We understand from President Zelensky that he feels that if Ukraine falls to Russian hands, that Lithuania and Poland are probably next. What would that mean for security in Europe? All of those, it's a little bit of a mishmash of my thoughts, and I apologize if it's come across a little bit disorganized, but that's sort of the way that we're feeling at the moment, is, yeah, you know, we're not really quite sure what to make of things.
Yeah, and I think that's what it is, because we're looking at this whole picture and we're trying to figure out what on earth is going on. Why hasn't NATO intervened? Why haven't we seen other countries actually coming to the protection of Kyiv and Ukraine? I mean, they might be there, but very subtly. They're sending all sorts of things, and they're certainly sending their best wishes. But we've got this global power that unprovoked is marching in to another country, causing a million refugees at this stage to flee the area, thousands of wounded, and we don't even know at this stage how many are dead, the cities being destroyed, and yet NATO is playing around with, well, they're not really a member of NATO, the EU kind of saying the same thing, and Americans saying, well, we won't send troops, but we'll send all sorts of other things, including sanctions. It doesn't make any sense.
It's very, very strange for me. I would have thought that if a country is approaching NATO in order to get the military protection that NATO offers, and if as a result of that approach to NATO, that country comes under military attack, you know, isn't there some sort of a logical conclusion that NATO would somehow be more active in protecting? I mean, I would have thought. But of course, you know, my vision and knowledge of NATO is somewhat limited. So, you know, it's just a view from the man in the street thinking this just does not make sense. And when you see Russia attacking a railway station in Kyiv, and when you see schools being bombed, and when you see people huddling for their lives because originally there was an agreement entered into between Russia and Ukraine that Ukraine would disarm and that Russia would protect it. And now as a result of that disarmament and Russia's attack not having fulfilled its part of the bargain, Ukraine is left effectively naked without the ability to protect itself, and is, in spite of all of that, doing an unbelievable job.
Ansan says, is it not all simply about the oil?
Well, or the gas, you know, the oil. I mean, we always come down to this in the end, right? Is it about the oil and is it about the gas? And I'm not really sure. I don't really think it's about the oil and the gas. I mean, it's interesting that Russia's very much used the gas as a lever to get European countries to toe the line and not to condemn and not to carry out sanctions. It's not been very successful, but it's a very distinct possibility that Russia could turn the gas off to Europe and it would leave countries like Germany in dire straits. There's no doubt about that. It also makes it very interesting in terms of looking at what Israel's opportunity is in terms of exporting its own gas to Europe as an alternative to Russian gas. But I'm not sure that this is all about oil and gas. I mean, oil and gas will play a role and will always play a role, but I don't think it's only about that.
Anthony Reich, thank you. As always, we'll catch you on Monday morning. I hope you have a fantastic weekend. A Chodesh Tov, a Shabbat Shalom, and we'll speak to you 7:45 Monday morning.